Let's get started. Again, Mazel Tov to Yom HaMitzvah, and you should have lots of nachas from the Mishpacha. Tonight we are on Perek Tzadi Zion 97, and tonight's title is Inside Out. And tonight we're going to be looking at someone whom we have not looked at very much in our study of Tehillim, and that is Yoshua ben Nun. This is the 8th of 11 chapters that were written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote these chapters on scrolls. He handed them down until the time of David HaMelech. And David HaMelech adapted, edited them, and placed them in Tehillim. One kapitel for each different shevet. One for each different tribe. Now, we've been practicing our math for the last 8 weeks, and we've learned that there were 12 tribes and 11 scrolls. So, he did not misplace one of them. Moshe Rabbeinu did not write a kapitel that was about the tribe of Shimon, because if we remember from the Chumash, Zimri, when he engaged in his outrageous behavior in front of all of Klal Yisrael, and Pinchas slew him, killed him. Zimri was from the tribe of Shimon, and so therefore we don't have a kapitel, a chapter that talks about any of the attributes of the tribe of Shimon. And we discussed before that there's a certain lack of certainty as to when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote these. They were not, as the Torah was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu by Hashem, these are Moshe Rabbeinu's own writing, his own compositions, and his own words. And furthermore, David HaMelech adapted and may have done some editing, so we don't really know exactly word for word how Moshe Rabbeinu left it. We don't know exactly the scrolls, but that's the basic outline of what we know. This particular kapitel is dedicated to the tribe of Yosef and to the descendants of Yosef, because Yoshua ben Nun was descended from Yosef, and Yoshua ben Nun would lead Klal Yisrael in capturing Eretz Yisrael, in conquering Eretz Yisrael on Hashem's instructions. And we'll see why this kapitel so well relates to that. This is also part of Kabbalah Shabbos service that we say every Friday night. In the times of the Arizal, which would have been, let's say, the early 1500s, in Sfas, the Kabbalists used to go out into the field and greet the Shabbos queen as the sun set, dressed in white. And they used to say these series of psalms, these series of kapitelah that we call Kabbalah Shabbos. There's no actual tefillah in terms of requesting things in Kabbalah Shabbos. It's simply a series of kapitelah designed to bring in the Shabbos. And this is part of that. And all the way until Kapitel 101 are still in the series that were written by Moshe Rabbeinu. So the 11 kapitelah of Moshe Rabbeinu are all in a row. Unlike we've seen, like the B'nai Korach, they're scattered around. But he put all 11 kapitelah of Moshe Rabbeinu right in a row. And there's 12 pesukim, and some of these pesukim are, although I said I wasn't going to say this anymore, famous. Because every word, of course, that David HaMelech utters is famous. But I guess when you're famous, some things are more famous than others. So let's start off with verse 1, Pasuk Aleph, Hashem Malach Togei La'aretz. Yismichu iyim rabi. Hashem has reigned, the earth will exult, and islands will rejoice. So it's talking about the times of Mashiach. And it says, iyim are little tiny islands. Little itsy bitsy dot islands. You know, like if you wanted to buy your own desert island and need a king of it, you would buy an iyim. And that's the kind of island you would buy. So it seems like a strange example to bring, that the earth is going to rejoice in these times of the coming of Mashiach, even little tiny, whiny islands. So Chazal tells us, you know why? Because even those little tiny islands, right, even if you were to go out and buy a little tiny deserted island somewhere in the middle of the ocean, you would still hear about Hashem and the great things He was doing. Now the Balei Musar adds something, say, you know what? Little islands, it's like a metaphor for, what do you think little islands are afraid of? The big islands next to them. Little islands are always getting the short end of the stick.
And they disappear.
Right? Sometimes they disappear. Right? You come back next year and your island kingdom is underwater. Right? And the big islands are next to them. You know, and the little islands, so metaphorically speaking, the little islands are like the fact that, you know, there's always something giving you a clap in life. Right? There's always somebody bigger than you, stronger than you, tougher than you, more powerful than you, richer than you are, smarter than you are, who's going to come along and give you a clap. Even the smallest island of nothingness, right, will, there'll be no more big islands to bother with. They'll be able to rejoice completely with Hashem with no worries and no distractions from the bigger islands. So on a literal level, it means the whole world, even these little tiny islands that you don't even have a name. But on sort of a Musa level, it means that even the little islands will be part of the gang. Nobody gets left out. Anan va'arafel saviva, the cloud and the thick darkness are around him. Tzedek u'mishpat, that there's righteousness and justice, nechon kiso, and they're the foundation of his throne. So the cloud and the darkness is referring to the true, sometimes with Mashiach, we don't want to think of Hashem as having a cloud and darkness around him. That doesn't sound like a good metaphor. Usually we talk about light and bright things. And it'll be so beautiful, there'll be a cloud, thick cloud of gross darkness around Hashem. Oh boy, Moshe Rabbeinu must, but was he having a bad day when he wrote that? I mean, that doesn't seem like a very nice thing to say. What it's referring to is we'll see the cloud of darkness and thickness and awfulness that's the true reward of the Rishayim in this world. We'll see what Hashem has in store for people who seem to get away with everything here. We'll see that he comes with a big cloud of thick darkness to use. He used to dispense justice. Eish, there'll be fire, lefanot telet, that'll be going before him. Uslahet saviv tzarev, and it'll burn the enemies all around. So, a lot of importance to the Eish, the fire, is talking about the war of Gog and Magog. The big war that Chazal tell us will come sometime, either before or around the times of Mashiach. And the details of the war of Gog and Magog are very sketchy, based on what the Nevi'im tell us. But Gog is the name of a leader of a nation called Magog, who will come and wage some sort of war against Klal Yisrael. But the Pasuk is getting at something a little bit deeper. We've talked about the fact that in the times of Mashiach, the physical world is going to be the same as we know it. There'll be houses and tables and food. Now, the nature of it may change. It'll be easy to get the food. But the physical world will be here. We're not going to all be floating around. According to what we've been learning, according to the Rambam, we're not going to all be floating around as some disenchanted ether somewhere. We're going to be people. A different, better world, but we're going to be people in the world. But that doesn't mean that the times of Mashiach is not going to be ushered in with great drama. Just because the world is not going to blow up does not mean there's not going to be great drama. There's going to be fire and war, and there's going to be tremendous upheaval and drama, right, that are called the birth pangs of Mashiach. Right? So just because the times of Mashiach, we're still going to have you're not going to wake up one day and poof, it's there. There's going to be something is going to come. And that some unpleasant thing is going to usher in this time. So it says, Eish is going, fire is going to go before him. And the next book says, Hey, Riu Varakov Tevil, his lightnings will illuminate the world. Rasa Vatachel Arts, the earth saw and the earth quaked. His lightnings will illuminate the world. Really, we're going to get lightning bolts. So it's a beautiful mashal, it's a beautiful parable, because, you know, if you're out at night in a storm, you can't see anything. When do you see? You see a flash of lightning comes, and you can see for a few seconds. So what's the first thing you wish? More lightning. So Hashem comes with lightning, everything is illuminated. Right now, our lives, in terms of spirituality, are like that lightning storm. Up, down, a little, we get a little flash, we get a little light, right? But it's not... we have questions. We don't understand how things work. We're often puzzled, befuddled. All right? And once in a while we get a little lightning. See how things are going. But Hashem comes with the lightning, and the lights stay on. And the world will see and quake, right, when Hashem comes. And Harim Gadonag, right, Namasu Milifnei Hashem, mountains will melt before Hashem. Adon Kol Ha'aretz, in front of the master of all the world. So the mountains will melt. Does not literally mean that. Fortunately, she set up for the shir, so she's comfortable. It doesn't literally mean that when the times of Mashiach come, there'll be no more mountains, and everybody has to live in Chicago in a nice flat area with no mountains. The mountains will melt. So the Mefarshim say, what's going to melt in the presence of Hashem? What's the biggest mountain, the biggest obstacle to Hashem? Arrogance. People's own ideas about what they should do is just going to melt away. Mountains will melt like wax. The most stubborn person in the world cannot be stubborn anymore when Hashem reveals himself to the entire world. So that whole mountain of personal arrogance and emotion and stubbornness that keeps people from doing what they should, that's the biggest mountain. It's going to melt away. I was thinking maybe of a parable or a muscle like this, that, you know, sometimes if you think you know something that you're really sure of, and you're sure of it for a long, long time, and you're absolutely sure it's a fact, and one day you realize you're completely wrong your whole life. All the, just like, you have this sort of feeling like, oh, that's sort of like exhaling. So that's where all the errands are going to go. Oh, I was so stubborn. How could I have done that? How could I have, like, wanted to sleep 10 more minutes instead of getting up for it? What was wrong? How could I have said no, I'm not? What was wrong? It's just going to melt away like that. You can't stand in front of Hashem and Mashiach and Jews streaming into Eretz Yisrael and the nations of the world bowing down and be stubborn. You just can't. It's going to melt away. In verse 6, he says, Higidu Hashemayim Tzidku. The heavens will tell of his righteousness. V'ra'al kol amim kavodu. And all the earth will see his glory. Heavens, literally, even the weather will favor us. Even the weather will favor righteous people. When we need rain for the crops, it'll come, and when we don't, it won't. Even the heavens are going to cooperate. In the next verse in Ches, it says, Shamu v'tismach Sion. Sion heard and rejoiced. I'm sorry, what happened to seven is that I skipped it by accident. Please come on. We're on seven now. Yevoshu kol ovdei fesel amis halalim balilim ishtafu v'lo kol alim. All worshippers of graven images will be ashamed, and people who boast about idols will prostrate themselves before Hashem. So there's two things here. There's pesel and there's elilim. Pesel are actual like wooden images that people would bow down to. If you were to chas v'sholom carve out a statue and say, this is my God, and bow down to it, that's called pesel. Elilim, Elil is when you worship something that Hashem already created, as it were. So if you decide that the sun is God, that's not a pesel. You didn't make the sun and worship it. You're worshiping something, Elilim, you're worshiping something that's wrong, that you're worshiping a different God that you shouldn't be. You didn't make it. A pesel is something you went and made, and then you worship. So that's why it says the people who worship the pesel and the people who value the Elilim. So it's two different kinds of things. Now there's a midrash, beautiful midrash, and you know a lot of times the midrashim use flowery language and it uses metaphors to make a point. And the Ramchal says that's really the beauty of the midrash. You can teach a midrash to a 6-year-old kid in first grade, and he can come home and tell you the midrash perfectly and understand it exactly. And only when he's 20 does he realize he didn't understand any of it. Okay, midrash can be learned by people of all ages. The midrash says as follows: that when Mashiach comes, all the idols that were carved will come alive and spit in the face of all the people that worship them. Now, while it's possible that the Midrash means that literally, I have a feeling it doesn't. They're going to feel like they've been spit in the face when they realize the foolishness of what they've been doing.
Well, it's contempt.
Right? And that the contempt is just, how could, just going to spit in the face. Look what you did with your life. So now they're going to all have to bow down before Hashem and ask him for forgiveness. And what happened in Ches? Shama v'tizmach Tzion. Tzion heard and rejoiced. V'talgeinu b'nos Yehuda. And the daughters of Yehuda were very happy. L'man mishpatech Hashem. Because of your judgments, Hashem. So Tzion, us, will be happy. Because we know what's coming and we know that we have Mashiach. Everybody else is going to be terrified. Here comes the big war of Gog and Magog. Here comes the Jewish king. The rest of the world is going to be a little nervous about what's happening. We're not. Shamu v'tismach Tzion. We're going to be happy and rejoicing. We know what's coming. The rest of the world is going to be a little afeard. The daughters of, you know, I always read this line, the daughters of Yehuda rejoicing. And I just assumed it meant, you know, it was like an allegorical way of saying everybody will be happy. And Forshim say, no, it's literal. Mashiach is from what tribe? Yehuda. If your relative turned out to be Mashiach, wouldn't you be happy? Imagine finding out that your first cousin is Mashiach. That your family member is Mashiach. So everybody's going to be happy, but the daughters of Yehuda, the relatives, such nachas. You want nachas? Why don't you grow up to be Mashiach? That's nachas. So I'm being a little flip, but the truth is that's what it means. The daughters of Yehuda, look, our tribe, our people, our neighbors, my cousin, my uncle is Mashiach. It's a person. He has a family like everybody else. Ki ata Hashem, for you Hashem, Elyon al kol ha'aretz, are higher above the whole earth. Me'od na'leisa al kol Elohim, and you are better than all the other gods. We were doing so well till now. I mean, the beautiful picture we just painted, you're better than all the other gods. It's really not that much of a compliment to aren't any other gods. It seems like we sort of crashed the train over here now. So you are very much exalted above all other gods. The emphasis is on the Na'alesa, that you're very exalted, not the emphasis on the other gods. Because how does somebody or something or Hashem become exalted? Because when people think they're exalted and exalt them. Just like you can't be a king if you don't have subjects, you can't be exalted if people don't exalt you. So the emphasis on the verse is you're going to be so exalted because we're going to praise you and worship you so much that every other crazy fake god in the history of the world never got anything like that. Even in Egypt, when they made the whole world worship the sun, nobody ever got anything like what you're going to see. You're going to be exalted more than all those other gods. It doesn't say you're better, does it? Come back. Those aren't gods, but you know what? We're going to exalt you. Nobody ever seen nothing like what we're going to do. And it goes on to say, Ohavei Hashem, si nu ra. Those who love Hashem, hate evil. Shomer nafshos chasidav. Because he watches the souls of his precious ones, miyad reshoayim yatzilim, and he rescues them from the hand of the wicked. Fear evil if you love Hashem. Hate evil if you love Hashem. Let me ask you a question. Why is it that people tend to fear other people when they're doing wrong things? If someone is doing something that they shouldn't be, why should you be fearful of that? You know that Hashem wants the right thing done, right? So why is it that a person can do something wrong and get away with it?
You're afraid.
We're afraid. Why are they afraid? So don't answer that question, because I'm going to tell you an answer that Chazal say that deep down inside, way deep down inside, where you don't really think about it, the reason people fear people that seem to be doing things wrong is they seem to be getting away with it. They seem to be successful. Someone comes along and does something wrong to you and does something that you know shouldn't be done, why don't you stand up? So we have all the reasons, whatever, but Chazal, all that's right and all that's good. But we hit that down, you know what? People are scared of people that are doing bad things because they're doing bad things and they seem to be getting away with it. Even if they don't think that in their conscious mind. So says the Pasuk, if you love Hashem, hate evil. Know you, says the Pasuk, know thee, as they would say in the old translations, know thee that Hashem will pay this person back. And you needn't fear the person who's doing something wrong. Hashem will take care of you. It's a very, very deep point that Chazal are making, and something that people probably don't even realize consciously. If you take a moment and you think about your entire life, I'm almost positive, maybe not, but I'm almost positive that there have been times when people did something to you, from you, with you, or near you that was wrong, and that you felt was not only wrong, like, oh, I made a wrong turn on a one-way street, but it was really bad thing to do. And somehow deep down inside there was some hesitation based on some kind of fear of not doing anything. Hate evil. Hard thing to do Because it's a high level of betachon to realize I'm not having betachon just in me. I'm having betachon that if I tell this person, you can't do that to me, sorry. You're not allowed to do that. I'm like, what? And this person happens to be the president of the shul, or the president of the United States, whatever he may be. It doesn't matter. He said, Ohav Hashem, sinu ra. You love Hashem, you hate evil, wherever it manifests itself. Because you know why? That shomer nafshos chasidav. You know that Hashem protects you, and miyad rishoyim, and from the hands of the evil people He will save you. David HaMelech never backed down. Goodness gracious, of all the people that have good reason to say, you know what? I tried. I mean, let's face it. Right, this Shaul guy is not giving up. Right? Army after army after army. Hashem told him, go try and be king. I tried to be king. I tried, and I came back, and I tried again, and I tried again. How many times do I have to try? Right? So if he'd gone to a posek, the posek would have opened up the Shulchan Aruch of the times and said, you're right, David. You have fulfilled your obligation. You don't have to try anymore. You have tried so much that you are our Yotze. You've gone way above and beyond the call of duty. You don't have to try anymore. Close the Shulchan Aruch. David HaMelech didn't go say that. David HaMelech said, I love Hashem and I hate evil and it doesn't matter to me because Hashem will take care of it. And that's how a person can go above and beyond the call of duty like David HaMelech did. How could he do that all the time? After the nth time, hiding out in a cave somewhere, you'd think he'd have said, I gave it my shot. I can't do anything. This guy Shaul is Meshuggana. Right? He's Meshuggana. One day he likes me, and the next day he doesn't like me. All right, he sends the armies, and he doesn't send the armies. Guy's Meshuggana. I can't deal with this Meshuggana. I'm going home. And who'd have blamed him? Right? Who'd have blamed him if he did that? Could one person have had a time that, oh, Dubby, you really shouldn't have done that. You should have gone back to the cave and licked some more dirt. That was so much fun the first 15 times. Oh, but he kept trying. He hated evil. Doesn't matter. Hashem said, do this. You're not doing it. That's evil. That's out of my way. Out of my way, people. And in verse 11, it's supposed to get out with this famous saying, Or Zaruah Latzadik, there's a light planted for the righteous, Ule Yishrei Lev Simcha, and for people who have an upright heart, joy. Or Zaruah Latzadik, there's a light planted for righteousness. Means that every person and everything created in the world has the potential for either a spiritual purpose or spiritual growth. Or Zaruah Latzadik. There's literally, Rashi says it's literal, there's a light. There's a light that helps people, some sort of light that Hashem made, whatever, we don't know what that is, means exactly, that helps people grow spiritually. And even metaphorically, right? Or Zaruah Latzadik. Everything has a purpose. There's no such thing as a person who can't grow spiritually, and there's no such thing as a thing that can have no purpose. Or Zeruah Latzadik, there's a light that feeds everything. Simchu tzadikim, rejoice tzadikim ba'Hashem with Hashem, v'haydu l'zecher kodesh, and give thanks to His holy name. Be glad, righteous people, right? For Hashem is going to take care of you. This is beautiful. The Lord has reigned, the earth will exult, islands, even the little tiniest islands, will rejoice. Fire will go before Him and burn His enemies all around. His lightnings will illuminate the world. The mountains of arrogance are going to melt like wax. The worshippers of images will bow down, and we will hear it and we'll know what's coming, even though the rest of the world is scared. And there's a light for everybody to accomplish their spiritual purpose. Who was Yeshua ben Nun? Remember, we said in the beginning this was dedicated to the tribe of to the descendants of Yosef because of Yeshua ben Nun. Moshe Rabbeinu had children, and they did not succeed him in his job. I would have thought that who would be the next leader after Moshe Rabbeinu? His kid, one of his kids. His kids didn't even come close to getting the part. Yeshua ben Nun got the part. Now, we have in the Chumash. The entire Chumash is building, almost from the very beginning, to the big Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's no question that Yetzias Mitzrayim is a fundamental key point in the entire Chumash, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu, the entire story of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, is building up to the moment when Hashem tells him, go, bring my people out of Egypt. And also the Chumash gives us an entire build-up for Yeshua ben Nun, right? Wrong. Yeshua ben Nun comes out of nowhere. Well, not literally, but comes almost out of nowhere. There's no big build-up for Yeshua ben Nun. Yeshua ben Nun came, and he wanted to be a Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu was like the sun and Yeshua was like the moon. Everything Moshe said was absorbed by Yeshua ben Nun. And they say, the Medrash says that Yeshua ben Nun used to make a fool of himself, that he would constantly run after Moshe Rabbeinu, please teach me again, please teach me more, and would drive Moshe Rabbeinu crazy. Figuratively speaking, doesn't say drive crazy in the Medrash, but there's this kid running after him all the time, all right, teach me again, and I'm sure I got it the first 300,000 times. Right, can we chazer again a little bit tonight, maybe after midnight? Right? No, it's just constantly going after Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Dedicated to learning everything he could from Moshe Rabbeinu. He started off with an unassuming Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu. There's an interesting medrash that says when Sarai became Sarah, she lost a yud. Gained a hey. Lost the yud. So the Medrash says the yud came and it complained to Hashem. I used to be in this important person's name. I was very important. You know, Sarai, every time Sarai was there, it'd be a nice yud. Now, what do I have now? Avraham has no yud. Sarai has no yud. I'm nothing anymore. So Hashem said, don't worry, I'm saving you for Yeshua ben Nun. Right? And he changed Yeshua's name. When he changed Yeshua's name, he gave him a yud. God tells us it's a yud from Sarai. What does that mean? I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in the subject of deep midrashim, but it means that don't think that Yeshua ben Nun had no yichus and no background and no standing to come and be a Talmud for Moshe Rabbeinu. He was descended from Avraham and Sarah. That's all the standing you need to get a yud. He didn't need any. He worked hard and he earned it. He put himself ahead of the children of Moshe Rabbeinu through his own efforts. There's a story about the Netziv. It's a somewhat famous story. I'll try and put a little bit different touch on it. And that is in Reb Chaim of Volozhin, when he started the Volozhiner Yeshiva in Europe, after the Reb Chaim Volozhiner was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, and he started the first, what we would consider to be modern style yeshiva, which was Volozhin, which was the mother of all yeshivas that came after it. Every yeshiva we have today is both physically, literally, and spiritually descended from Volozhin. So after Reb Chaim of Volozhin passed away, there were various people that were eligible to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and to make a long story short, at one point, one of the yeshivas was the Netziv. The Netziv has a commentary in the Torah, and the Netziv was a very, very, very amazing individual. Now, when the Netziv finished his sefer on his commentary on Chumash, he made a siyum. He made a siyum hadar, thanking Hashem. And he said, I'm not thanking Hashem that I wrote this sefer. I'm thanking Hashem for letting me know that I could write a sefer. And he told the story that when he was a kid, around bar mitzvah age, so in those days, unless you showed great potential, you went out to work. And you learned a little at night or whatever, but you worked on the farm with the family or whatever. So he was upstairs and he heard his father come home and his mother said, the Rebbe came by today and little Naftali is not so serious about his studies and they don't think he needs to go on further. So, and the mother was crying. And the father said, all right, I'll take him tomorrow to the sandal maker and we'll try to see if he can get an apprenticeship, learn a trade. And the Netziv heard this from upstairs and he felt bad. And his mother was crying over this. And he resolved then and there that he was going to turn his attention to his studies and make something of himself. So, that's a beautiful story that he told. I'd like to take it one step further. Let's pretend we have a video camera in the Shemayim. And let's pretend that Netziv never heard that conversation. So the Netziv would get to the Shemayim, and the Shemayim would say, where's your sefer? I'm Naftali the Sandelmacher. No, I'm a sandal maker, and a sandal maker. I was terrific. I was seriously dedicated to being completely honest in my business. I upheld every mitzvah. I davened with kavanah 3 times a day. Right? I left the store every day early and learned 6 hours every night by candle. Right? And he would describe someone who we would think, wow, what a guy. I'm sure he's zooming to the head of Shemayim. And Shemayim would say, where's the Sefer? Well, it's nice that you did all that, but that wasn't your potential. You had a lot more potential. Where's the Sefer? What do you mean, where's the Sefer? You know what I did? I was up crack of dawn every day of my life and daven v'sikin before I went into the store, right, and gave all the free sandals to the poor people, right, and then learned 6 hours and went home and helped my wife with the kids and on and on and every list of dream person things you could do. And Shemayim would say, that's gevaldik. We marked all that down already. By the way, where's the Sefer? Did you bring it with you? Because people don't realize their own potential. You know, when we stood by Har Sinai, and it says that when Moshe Hashem talked to Moshe Rabbeinu, we all passed out. Our neshamas went out of us. So Moshe Rabbeinu is standing there, talking to God. But I won't even insult you by saying, can you imagine what that's like? Because I don't even know what I'm saying, right? But I could, passing out seems like a reasonable thing to do at that point. Right? They didn't pass out because of what they saw Moshe Rabbeinu do. They passed out when they realized they could all be Moshe Rabbeinus. When they realized what their potential was, that was more than they could take. Yeshua ben Nun came and he said, I have potential. I can bug Moshe Rabbeinu. I can learn everything. And one day, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, Yeshua will be your successor. And the Medrash says that he called Yehoshua a hero among Klal Yisrael. Now, we usually think of a hero, you know, the Maccabees were heroes, right? They went out and they fought zillions of Greeks who were far more powerful than they had. But the Medrash calls Yehoshua ben Nun a hero. You think he didn't have to sacrifice? You think his wife wouldn't have maybe liked he could come home one night before midnight? Mrs. ben Nun had to sacrifice also. The point of this kapitel being dedicated. The capital is beautiful. And it talks about all of the glory and the spiritual glory that's going to be in the times of Mashiach. So David HaMelech said, who to dedicate that to? Moshe Rabbeinu said, who to dedicate that? There's only one person to dedicate that to. Yehoshua ben Nun. Because Yehoshua ben Nun realized what every person is supposed to realize, that we all have more spiritual potential than we think. It would have been very easy for Yehoshua ben Nun to be a leader, one of the elders, you know, and to have had a seriously important position, and to have really been a fine, upstanding, I don't want to make it sound silly, a fine, upstanding, you know, elder member of Klal Yisrael who would be long remembered as a tzaddik. But you see, I think I could do a little more than that. So this kapitel was dedicated to people who think they can do a little more than that. Imagine it. Now, when we, after 120 years, get to the Shemayim, is Hashem going to say, where's your Sefer? You get, wow, we did this and this, and they, ah, that's good. Did you bring with you, well, no, I didn't think I could do that. Ah, okay. Thanks. Check. 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 Next. Every one of us can do more than we think we can. Sometimes it takes a dramatic incident like the life of the Netziv. Even the Netziv didn't realize that he could do more than he thought he could. It took some dramatic incident to make him realize that. So Moshe Rabbeinu wrote this about spiritual glory. And when you read this, it's hard to imagine getting out. The lightning and this is going to be there. And the lesson is, yeah, you know what? It can happen, it's going to happen, and you can make it happen. You have more ability than you really know. I think that when I would read this kapitel, when I read it from now on, that's what's going to remind me of. That a person can do more than they think they can. I just, Yehoshua ben Nun, someday maybe Amir Tisham will be zachet to learn the Sefer Yehoshua together. But Yehoshua was an amazing individual. The first self-made man, if you will. I probably should say that. I mean, that has other connotations. I don't think he made good real estate deals or anything like that. But you can do so much more than you think you can. And that's what this kapitel is talking about. It had to be dedicated to Yehoshua ben Nun. Now, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you can do a lot. Moshe Rabbeinu was just sitting there. No one told him, hey, buddy, come here. You know what? You can do a lot. He said, no, I can do it. I can do a lot. I'm going to, and Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, Yeshua. Okay, fine, we'll learn some more. And the Nagi says, literally, Yeshua made a fool out of himself. He bugged Moshe Rabbeinu so much that he looked like an idiot. But he knew he could do more. And he never lost that faith in his ability to do more. Questions?
There's a comment. I don't know if when you or Samantha was here. I know Rachel and Mrs. Buckman were there. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Pat spoke. Mm-hmm. And the Havdil he compared. He said, a guy who's in the Olympics and he, you know, does the high jump and he keeps practicing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he raises the bar, and he can never seem to get higher. And he's practicing in a field and he sees a bull coming at him.
Over the top,
he said. And then the bar is raised, because then, of course, that becomes the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Hashem, it's true, we can do ad kan, but when we take that leap of faith, Hashem helps us jump over so that the next bar...
Mm-hmm. And you notice every year in the Olympics it's a little higher, because each time the person, you know, the record from 50 years ago looks sad compared to today's records. Because each year it inches up.
That's right.
Did you know the scientific fact? If you take a shoebox and fill it with fleas, live fleas, and they fly around. I don't recommend you try this at home, but trust me on this. And you fill it with fleas, and you leave it there for, you know, half a day or whatever. You take the top off, fleas won't fly out of the box.
Because that's the limit.
They think that's what they can do. You know, they think that they can fly up to here, and that's it. Oh, the bottom, there's no cover now.
How did you learn that? Scientific fact.
In the science class once. I actually did. I actually saw this in the science class as a kid. It was not in this context of Kapitel, but I put it over here. But yes, you can put the fleas in, you can take the top off, and they don't go anywhere.
But you see with children all the time, that they, I can't, and they say, oh yes, you can. Why don't you try just one more time, and they give this little, like a little tap, whatever, and the kid says, I can do it.
I did it.
And then they go another challenge. Mm-hmm. Instead of, I'm sorry, you can't do it, and you pick them up.
Mm-hmm. The lesson is all around this. I just finished coaching Little League, and we start off with some of these kids that, I don't know, maybe are like 3 inches tall, and they can hardly hold the bat, and, you know, by the end of the season, you know, they can hit the ball, right? But they didn't think they could, right? And we have to apply that same thing to spirituality and to things that we do in that realm, because we can sort of visualize, okay, I walked a mile today, I can walk a mile 0.1 tomorrow. Because we're sort of used to that idea, you know, in terms of like physical exercise kinds of things. You know, you don't start off on the treadmill doing 2 hours. You start off with 10 minutes and 15 and 20, and then for me, you go back to 10 and whatever, but you start, you know, and you increase gradually. Right? So why isn't it the same thing? You can always do a little more. Has anybody ever said, oh, you know what, I was on the treadmill so long that no matter how much I practice, I'll never be able to go 1 second longer? It's not true. The same thing applies. If you think, well, you know what? I daven with so much kavanah today, I could never daven with more kavanah than that. It's not true. That doesn't mean you didn't do a good job today. That means you have to think, wow, I did a really good job today. I wonder if I can do 0.1 better tomorrow. That treadmill and that jumping over the bar thing, Yeshua ben Nun figured out, works in Ruchnius also. And it does. You see in Yeshiva, you know, that's how Rebbeim bring kids along as well. And teachers, good teachers, encourage the kids, try a little bit more than you did yesterday. Okay, you couldn't daven the whole thing today. Tomorrow we're going to do, you know, this. And they bring them a little bit and a little bit and a little bit and a little bit. And we somehow lose that when we grow up. I guess because we don't have a little Rebbe there giving us candy maybe. Or
maybe because many Rebbeim didn't learn the art of saying, oh, look, you got this right today.
Mm-hmm.
And not look how many you got wrong.
That's also true.